Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking about. Welcome to issue number 34, quite delayed because of technical difficulties. We have technical difficulties because this is a special show. This is issue 34, and we're going to be naming out our fourth inductee. Well, is it fourth?
Well, there is.
Maybe technically.
Christopher fucking Lee was the inaugural one. Bruce fucking Campbell, Clint Fustin. Busting Eastwood.
Ghostbuster Eastwood.
Fucking Eastwood and stand the fucking man Lee.
Okay, so
this will be the event. This is just the test.
Well, Christopher Lee was the not what was, but he was 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, but he is the first.
Fine. So okay, this is our fifth foray into the Donald Board of the Zone of Ruth Oz. So we have John once again from the Bang the Board cast, naming the Bang the Board cast nominee this time around. Say hello, John.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Well, I'm okay. Don't like computers too much right now. But hey.
You didn't break it this time.
We didn't break it this time. But as you know, if you listen to the show, this is a weekly geek cast where we talk about all kinds of gaggles of geeky goodness. This week we have, technically we're going to have four topics this week. I'm so used to seeing three. But we're going to be starting up everything with the casting couch of the Superman franchise. What would happen if the Red Phone Zone production company were given the leash to a Superman movie? Following that up, we're going to be doing a characterization of the 2010 Christopher Nolan film Inception, and what would happen if we tried to make that work in a role-playing game setting. After that, we're going to be doing Confessions of a Movie Snob on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. After we do that, we're going to be naming off our nominees for the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruth Oz. So It's going to be a longer show. I'm glad that we have John in on it. Unfortunately, nobody else could be on it because Buffalo is having weather issues. But hopefully it isn't covered in ice yet. But
keep yourself safe out there.
Yeah, do be careful, John. So, but before we do any of that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. I want to open this one up with one that is quite personal to me, in that if you guys watched our top six favorite films, my number one most favorite film was The Empire Strikes Back. Irving Kirshner, director of The Empire Strikes Back, passed away at the age of 87, I believe, on Monday. And
News came through on that. He died at age of 87. News came through on the 29th. So,
right. He died.
But he, yes.
So that leaves George Lucas as the last surviving director of a Star Wars film. Richard Marquand, director of The Return of the Jedi, passed away. I don't remember what year it was, but he died of just like a freak bout of cancer. And so that leaves George Lucas. And unless you count the dude that directed the Clone Wars animated thing, Dave Filoni. But I don't, because it's not real. But that kind of makes me sad. He also directed RoboCop 2.
Yep.
He also directed Never Say Never Again, which was Sean Connery's last outing as James Bond. Not a very good movie.
No.
When it comes down to it, Empire Strikes Back was by far the best movie he did that I saw. John, have you seen anything he's done besides The Empire Strikes Back?
I think only The Empire.
Yeah.
He also did RoboCop 2.
Yeah, yeah. And I liked RoboCop 2 for what it was. I mean, it wasn't the original, but it was fun and a stupid little movie. But yeah, he will be missed. He did a good job, and, you know, he had the pleasure of being the director of what is, you know, widely considered the best Star Wars movie there is. And so he definitely left his mark. Moving on, another little piece of sad news. Before we get into the good stuff, famed comedian actor Leslie Nielsen also passed away, and I believe that was actually on Sunday at the age of 84. I say it was Sunday because I actually heard this live on the Bagden Boardcast because it came through on a news alert on one of their phones, and it was pretty much told as soon as it had happened. And that's kind of weird because over the course of the Red Phone Zone, we've been discussing a lot of deaths that have happened over the course of the Airplane films. I mean, first we had Peter Graves, then we had what's her name? Barbara Billingsley. No, yeah? Barbara Billingsley. And then now we have Leslie Nielsen, you know. And I think it's sad. I think he's done a lot of funny movies.
I knew him first as the guy in Naked Gun, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I can't even remember his name in those. And I don't know that I've seen them, honestly. I mean, I'm sure I have, but I don't recall.
They're amusing.
Yeah.
It wasn't probably the best first thing to see from him. And I've seen Airplanes since then, and I find it pretty funny. I mean, it's not exactly my kind of humor.
Well, do you guys got any news?
Other than those, let's see.
I was really good about finding a bunch of science news this week, actually.
Cool. If you don't have any news, I have more. I just felt like I was talking a lot.
No, it's fine. I haven't had much of a chance to look at the news this week, but they're really, other than those deaths, there really hasn't been any huge news that I've spotted.
No.
No castings, no new movie release, or new movie projects being brought up.
There has not been definitive casting information on it, but they have announced one of the female characters in The Dark Knight Rises. And that is, they have confirmed it's going to be Talia al Ghul.
Cool. Hey.
So I called that one. I'm very happy. I'm very happy to say that.
I believe we were all very hopeful that that would be the case.
Mm-hmm. And I, for one, want it to be Rachel Weisz. I would love to see that.
That'd be cool. I do know, I do see Hans Zimmer is going to score Superman, speaking of Superman today.
Yep.
And as
the director?
Christopher Nolan has confirmed that this will be his last Batman.
Are you seriously bringing that up for a third week in a row?
No, that was Christian Bale confirmed it.
But I still don't consider that news. He's been saying that forever.
Apparently, Sci-Fi Wire does consider it news.
Well,
it's official that Nolan is not going to be doing it anymore.
Well, yeah.
As well as, you know, basically it seemed like, you know, Bale bailed, and then Nolan decided to go ahead and say, no, it'll be the last one, as opposed to re-upping for another trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool. I mean, I think
You know what it means now, it's just another reboot.
Yeah, unfortunately. But hopefully it'll be another 15 years, there'll be some other, you know, cool, new, young, fresh talent to take it on, and, you know, get himself a good going. Are you looking forward to Nolan's Batman movies being over, John?
We lost John.
That's awesome.
We're getting back at it. We are getting back after this segment, so.
That'll be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is something that I said before on the show that I don't particularly want to do, and that would be getting into rumor mongering. But I've decided that I want to jump on a little piece of a rumor that I heard. Just because I found it interesting, and they were discussing who Tom Hardy would be playing in The Dark Knight Rises, once again Nolan's third outing in the Batman movie, and there's actually been a confirmation from Nolan stating that he won't say who it is, but they've been asking for source materials, and I'm not remembering the name of the book off the top of my head, and it's killing me. It was out of Legends of the Dark Knight. It was the story where they brought in Hugo Strange as the police psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's strong rumors and rumblings, and they won't even dismiss the possibility. He's been directly asked. He just says, I don't want to say anything about that. And they are discussing Hugo Strange as a villain in The Dark Knight Rises, which I would find interesting because he actually is a villain that predates the Joker, and he's the oldest still going Batman villain, and I can see that, and especially with the police psychologist line, because in the story that I'm not remembering the name of, he was hired by the police to try to find Batman, which would fit very nicely into what we were left off with in the end of The Dark Knight. So we got that.
Cool.
Any other?
The only other thing I spotted today was Darabont fired the entire writing staff on Walking Dead for some reason.
There's nothing being said about why?
No, not as far as I saw. So that's an interesting thing. And the final episode of this season should be coming up within the next week or two.
Right.
And should be coming out on DVD. They announced in March.
Cool. So, I'll be totally checking that out.
Yeah. I've only seen those two episodes so far, but I liked what I saw, obviously. I mean, we did the Watch This segment on it, so.
Yeah.
As you mentioned in Watch This, there's a comic book that it's based off of, so these are all conversion writers. They're just translating
they're just adapting the script.
Yeah, but you need good people to adapt it. At least the first episode was written by Darabont.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if he did the second one or not, but he's the head.
he's the showrunner. Yeah. I mean, he's the showrunner. I mean, I doubt anything's really happening without his finger in that pie, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's a good director.
He is a pretty good director. But cool. See, other than that, I wasn't going to bring this up, but you saying that reminded me of the casting director from The Hobbit being fired. Did you hear about that?
Mm-mm.
He was hired because he put out a call asking.
He was hired because he put out?
He was fired because he put out an announcement that he is looking for fair-skinned, diminutive actors to play hobbits in the movie, and going so far as to telling a Middle Eastern woman that she doesn't look like a hobbit, and blah blah blah, and it caused a kind of a shitstorm, so to speak, because it comes across as racist.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know if I agree about that. I think
disagree in that on that. It's a European story, isn't it?
Yeah. Not really, but it's a Middle Earthian story.
Right. I mean, but there's a fair European vein to it. I mean, it's pretty much European legend.
So what are you saying?
I don't think it's racist at all. It's like saying
I don't think it is either.
Not have a black guy play Robin Hood.
What it comes down to is it's just like saying I think it's just politics of the situation. I mean, he probably could have handled wording that a little bit better than he did, and he got fired for it. Too bad. He'll be moving on. What's your science news so we can get John back on?
Get going on things. Well, I'll just do a real quick. I'll do one and then the robot news.
Mm-hmm.
They have a group led by Paul Saja out of Columbia University is creating a company based off a project that came out very, very successfully called Neuromatters. And it is a way of basically reading your brain for information. Basically, the idea is that your brain understands things faster than you're consciously aware of it. So what they can do is say, well, we want to filter this data, and you know what you're looking for, and all we need you to do is look at a series of flashing images, and your brain is actually able to pull out, like, we want to find all the pictures with birds in them. And then it goes, and your brain does the work of capturing which ones have birds in them, mm-hmm. and then the computer can pick that up off of your brain waves directly. And you don't even know how many pictures it was, but the computer does.
And your brain would, because it goes faster it's going to work faster than your eyeballs or any computer on the planet.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and so they're starting a company based off of that. It's mostly, I mean, military applications is the, like, where they got their first stuff, but video game technologies and other kind of analytic tools are being thought of to utilize this interface, basically. And as far as robots are concerned, this actually leads into it, is that that would be one of the ways of remote controlling this robot.
Mm-hmm.
It is after all the Robot Expo that I reported on last week. There is a civilian class one that is actually marketed apparently to paintball fanatics, because it comes with a paintball gun option.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a machine gun firm point on the top of it, and it's a remote controlled, like, it comes with a headset that you like remote control it. And it's marketed towards law enforcement and like paramilitary, you know, like group people who do like outings and paintballing and that kind of thing.
Cool.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's called the it's got a kind of a wacky name. Where is it? Megahertz tactical robot. Hertz as in like megahertz.
Right. I get it.
Like computer Hertz, reference, right. Not like.
Yeah, I gotcha. Not pain.
Yeah.
Cool. Do we got anything else news wise?
Nope, that's all I got.
Well, stay tuned. We're gonna be right back with our Casty Couch, as well as hopefully we're gonna have John back on the line. Stay tuned. We are back with the Casting Couch. This time around, we decided that we would take a stab at the DC property of Superman. And in our defense, I believe at the time that we made this list, we did figure out the whole entire season a long time ago. And I think at the time that we did it, there was no director. It wasn't even 100% confirmed that it was going to be moving. But we decided we wanted to say who we'd like to see playing in the Superman movie.
Yeah, and since they're doing a whole big reboot on the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like I just figured, hey, let's give it a shot and see what we do. And we decided to do something different this time around.
We did. And what we are going to do is, typically what we do is we just come up with like four or five roles that we decide that we want to fill. And we get those roles figured out. And we did something along those lines where we had, I believe it was four roles that we decided we wanted to cast. But then we decided we couldn't really make up our mind on who to do for the villain. So what we decided to say was that we each person gets to choose their villain, cast that villain, and say why they'd like to see said person. So when we're doing this, what we decided to do is we are going to start off with Clark Kent, and we will we're going to move our way on to the villain in the last place. So let's get this thing started. Ethan, who'd you do for Kal-El?
Well, to start off with what I, just to preface everything, is I decided to go a bit with the older crowd, 30 to 40.
Okay.
With pretty much most of my actors except for, you know, Jimmy Olsen, pretty much, who I
sure.
see as a...
He's a kid.
So.
Yeah.
And so I decided when I was going through casting, Superman I found was a little difficult to cast, but I kept going... through various different actors and going, well, you know, I actually looked at some of the ones that have been talked about. I looked at some of the ones that I personally liked. And then I kept coming back to one actor that I really, you know, I think he's got that early Superman sort of innocence that sort of Christopher Reeve had, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, as we all know, I didn't mind Brandon Routh at all.
Me neither.
But I decided to go a new route. And the reason I went with this guy is he was in Superman Returns, but it's James Marsden.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I think he's got a good look for it. He's got that innocent farm boy sort of aspect to him. But I think we can obviously also pull off the physicality of it and
sure.
the square jawed I'm Superman. And I see this movie as him coming to terms with being Superman and you know starting off a little wide eyed and you know. Whoa, hey, you know, I'm Superman, and then at the end being, I'm Superman, you know.
Sure.
And James Marsden, of course, was in Superman Returns, but I sort of see him, and that was my big hang-up on casting him, was he was in that.
Yeah.
But I just kept going back to him, and he's also the guy who played Cyclops.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That's who I settled on, and I believe he is 37.
Is he yes. that old?
Huh. 37 years old. Actor James Marsden. So that's who I went with my Superman Kal-El.
Cool. Moving on. Shay, what'd you do?
Okay. I went with Brandon Routh again. I sort of feel like in the perfect world, Christopher Reeve would have made that last movie and then they would have cast Brandon Routh after that last movie in a new series. And so I think he should have a chance to sort of step out of Christopher Reeve's legacy. I'd like to see him maybe bring a little bit of a less somber version. He seemed like he had that lightness in him.
He could see it when he was playing Clark.
Yeah, it may be a lighter version of Superman with a little less sorrow.
It's definitely going to be... I know this movie is being made, obviously, and
yeah.
I think it's definitely going to be a hard one to sit there and cast. Because with Superman Returns, you at least had well, we're making sort of a throwback to the Richard Donner movies, and you know, well, we want someone who's you know who emulates Chris Reeve. Whereas I think now they're going to really try they should really try to sort of step away from that and start establishing a new vision of the character,
right?
Instead of having everyone look at it and go like, I mean, I'm stuck in that rut of Superman is Christopher Reeve to me,
right?
So I think they need to try to break that. Think at this point.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, I always think of Superman as being black hair, blue mm-hmm. eyes, kind of tall, not really all that bulky, but I mean, that's the frame they've drawn him as, and
mm-hmm.
I don't see there's any reason to necessarily go away from that. I don't think Brandon Routh really looks that much like Christopher Reeves. If he didn't try to sort of channel Christopher Reeves, like I think he did in that movie, I think he could do a different version. I think he'd do a very good job of having... I just think he didn't get a really good chance to play Superman himself.
Okay. What do you say, John?
I think I'm going to have to agree with chain on this because I put Brandon Routh too. I think he got overshadowed by bad story versus how good he was as Superman and Clark Kent. Same thing as I would love to see Kevin Spacey again as Lex Luthor. You're probably not going to see that, but those are two guys who did a really good job in the movie, but the movie just didn't support them.
Well, I agree. I also decided to go with Chris Brandon Routh as well. My decision in that was, and I think Shay put it more eloquently than I had in mind, in that he was very much so channeling Christopher Reeve. And, you know, that was fine because that movie was kind of a swan song, a send-off to the Christopher Reeve storylines. Mm-hmm. And then I just, you know, and I agree with what John's saying, that he was bogged down with a bad story and a bad cast and everything. I do disagree that I absolutely hated Spacey as Luthor, but that's because I just wanted to see a different kind of Luthor because we've seen the, we saw the Gene Hackman Luthor, and as fun as he was, he's just not Lex Luthor. And I thought that Spacey pulled off a heading into the pulling inspiration from Gene Hackman more than from
an
the books.
Homage to the old, previous
but,
actor.
But be that as it may, I do not think that we should throw in the towel on Routh. I think that I've seen him in enough other movies to where he does have his own distinct personality, and I do think that he could pull it off. So that's where I went with Mr. Reeve. So I guess moving on.
With Mr.
Superman.
With Mr. Superman. But you know, man, talk about a slip.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just it. It's fundamentally is.
He is Christopher Reeve.
When we grew up, it was Chris Reeve.
Yeah.
Either that or
Dean Cain.
And the way I'm looking at this movie is to start a new franchise and just basically
I agree.
Make Superman for this generation and move forward. But
I just feel so wrong about throwing in the towel on everything.
I think it was firmly established when we did our confessions on Superman Returns. We liked the actors in it for the most part.
Yeah,
Superman and Spacey's performance.
Yeah,
and
Ethan
we all
liked
love
it.
Brandon Routh. I thought he did a great job.
I did
love
too.
To see him come back.
Me
I just
too.
Know it's not going to happen.
I know it isn't going to happen either. Right now, it's looking like it's going to be Matthew Good, the guy that played Ozymandias in the.
I don't like that. At all.
I hate that myself, but we'll see.
Okay.
Moving on, and now we're going to be talking about the love interest in Lois Lane. Ethan, who'd
Lois
you do?
Lois Lane. This was actually the first. The first part I cast, and I went with a 39-year-old actress by the name of let me pull her up on IMDb because I know at least one person at this table isn't going to know who I'm talking about.
It's probably me.
It's totally Aaron. I don't know. You might not.
Aaron doesn't know about
you,
it.
You probably won't recognize the name, but you will recognize what she's been in. But it's an actress named Kimberly Williams Paisley.
I know that name.
She was the daughter in Father of the Bride.
Gotcha. Okay.
I most recently saw her in a TV miniseries she did about 10 years ago called The Tenth Kingdom.
Okay. She was in that.
That's her. And she's feisty, she is pretty, and I can just see her playing a good Lois Lane and see her just pulling off this... My idea of a good Lois Lane, obviously, is the her own woman. She doesn't take shit from anybody. She goes does her own thing. And I think this woman pulls off the that beauty, I think. And
sure.
That really, it's just beauty and feistiness. So, I mean, that's what she does.
You got to have that
dog that is Lois Lane. Mm-hmm.
And so, Kimberly Williams Paisley.
Interesting direction.
Yeah.
What do you do, Shay? Natalie Portman?
No, I know she's actually in the running for it. It's been mentioned a couple of times.
I don't believe that shit for a second.
Just
I don't believe that shit for a second.
Incidentally, my actress was 39.
Me too.
I was actually looking for something completely different and found my way to a list of actresses, and I was looking for someone whose name I recognized, and I clicked on this name and went, she's a really good choice for Lois Lane. It's Anne Hathaway.
Oh, my gosh.
She's a 28-year-old. She's kind of classy.
Hey, she's gorgeous.
Yeah. She's kind of got
a classy. She's also co-hosting the Oscars.
A little bit of a...
Along with what's-his-nuts.
James Franco.
Yeah. A slightly odd kind of look. Not, you know, she doesn't look like the girls on the cover of Playboy. She's got a little bit of a...
No, I think she's gorgeous.
A wispy maybe look to her, but I could see her with a little bit of an, add a little bit of an edge, and I think she's, you know...
I think given the right, career path and given the right... management, basically, she could be someone along the lines of Grace Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. I mean,
oh, yeah.
She's very talented. She's very talented. She's very beautiful. Give it a couple years.
She's going to have an Oscar.
And the right people, you know, the right career decisions. Then
2-time Oscar nominee?
Already?
I believe so. I know that she was nominated for Sense and Sensibility, and she might have been nominated for Brokeback Mountain. I don't recall.
Yeah.
Maybe not, because I know that Michelle Williams was, but she definitely got nominated, or not Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice. I know she was nominated for that. That wasn't Anne Hathaway, was it? That was, what's her face? Keira Knightley. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe she doesn't have one.
I'll find out.
Cool. Well, good choice, Shay. Moving on. John?
I went for a character actress who I think could, and who has shown, like, be very strong but still have that femininity that I think that Lois Lane always has. She's always a very strong character, and it's Marina Karin, who she's known from Firefly.
Oh, okay.
Inara.
Yeah, Inara.
Yeah.
I think she's got a great look when she's got her hair longer. And could pull off that kind of masculine woman.
Yeah.
Tough, yeah.
Cool. Well, when I was casting this, out of Superman Returns, if I had a role that I thought was the most poorly cast, it was Bosworth, Kate Bosworth as Lois Lane. I just thought that she didn't seem intelligent enough. She didn't seem hesitant. She seemed very hesitant. She didn't seem right at all. And so I started thinking about, like, you know, yeah, I didn't like it, but, you know, what would I do about it? You know, I mean, who am I to say? And so I really got to thinking about, like, the character of Lois Lane. And the way I see it is, you know, the femininity, the beauty of the character, you know, all those humanity things with her almost always seem to come second nature.
Only once.
Yeah, Rachel getting married, that's right. They almost always seem second nature to, like, that hard-nosed reporter, like the fast-talking reporter. 15 years ago, I would have probably cast Jennifer Jason Leigh based off of her role in the Hudsucker Proxy. Just that very much the fast-talking, you know, nail-biting, you know, kicking the shit out of Bruce fucking Campbell, you know, kind of character. But, you know, unfortunately, at this point, she's just too old for a love interest for Brandon Routh, since that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
And, you know, it pains me to admit it, but I'm agreeing with Shay a second time in a show. I chose Anne Hathaway.
You're kidding me.
As well. I love Anne Hathaway. I think she's one of those actresses that hasn't quite given us her best work yet, but it's there. You know, I mean, she's reminding me right now.
She's your mean face.
She is my female Heath Ledger. Meaning somebody I've got my eye on, because I see something there, and it just hasn't been explored well enough yet. Mm-hmm. And I think she's amazing, so I chose her.
She's a fantastic actress. She's a fantastic choice.
Wow. Okay. Moving on. I guess at this point, do we want to go with Perry or do we want to go with Jimmy? Fuck it. Let's go with Jimmy. Who'd you cast for Jimmy Olsen, Ethan?
I was thinking I need, you know, a young, wide-eyed, you know, I'm fresh out of school, or I'm an intern type of kid, and I went with Aaron Johnson from Kick-Ass.
Okay.
I thought you was dead-eyed.
Well,
you're always saying he's dead-eyed, dude.
Which is probably good for a photographer, right?
And what does dead-eyed mean?
Meaning he has no life in his eyes. I mean, Ethan has said this several times in the show. If you don't believe
me, if I have, I don't remember saying
it. He did. But okay, that's okay. That's okay. That's all right. But okay, Aaron Johnson. I like Aaron Johnson. Yeah. He's a kid. What is he, 17?
20.
Holy shit. He's that old?
He is 20 years
Didn't
old.
I cast him as Terry McGinnis?
I think so, yes.
Sounds right. Cool. I like him. Shay, what'd you do?
I actually, someone specific came to mind. It's a personal friend of mine from my stand-up comedy days. I swear to God. It's the guy who named me the Dungeon Master, but he's on IMDb. He's an Untraceable. He's doing stuff. His name's Dax Jordan, and he has a sort of the geeky... Jimmy Olsen.
Should have cast Tyler.
Yeah, hey. Tyler Cook's done.
He's too old. He's older than Brandon Routh. Yes. So that wouldn't work. Okay. Well, I mean, I can't comment because I don't know who the fuck he is. He looks pretty handsome, so I don't know. Okay, so moving on. I for one, yeah, I did not agree with Shay on this one because I don't know this guy and I have not seen Untraceable. And this was the last role I cast. I cast it today when I was out and about and I actually saw Star Trek. So I just went with Anton Yelchin, the young man who played Chekhov in the Star Trek reimagining that new Star Trek movie that we like so very much. He's just so young. And did I just? I went over John, didn't I?
I did.
It's all right. I'm sorry about that, John. But yeah, I cast Anton Yelchin. Who'd you cast, John?
Go ahead and finish what you're saying, and I'll just.
I think I did. I like him. He's got a youth to him that I think is very important with Jimmy Olsen, and you know, throw some red hair dye and there you go. All right, go ahead.
This kid named Josh Peck. He's probably best known as the fat kid in Drake and Josh.
Okay, yeah.
He's done a lot of movies lately. He's actually really trimmed down. He's going to be in the new Red Dawn remake. And he's got, I think, that kind of...
Wolverines!
But he's got that kind of spunk. He can be that wide-eyed, funny kind of kid for the movie.
Cool.
Sounds good.
I like it. So, is that everybody for
Jimmy Olsen?
I know. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your your toes there. But moving on, I guess it's now time to cast Perry White. Mm-hmm. What do you say, Ethan?
Well, continuing on my plan of trying not to tie it back into Superman Returns and failing with James Marsden anyway. I sort of thought about it, and you know, I loved Frank Langella. I mean, he was Skeletor, obviously.
Yep.
But I really enjoy the work of, and I sort of look at Perry White as sort of the father figure of the newsroom, obviously, and so I wanted someone in there that I wanted someone who was not physically a large person, but could be. Sort of character-wise, a large person. So I went with 60-year-old actor William H. Macy.
Cool. I like William. I could see him in a role
like that. We all know he's a fantastic actor. I would put him in that role, and I could just see him being that quiet yet stern father figure that the newsroom needs, and no stomping his feet, running around, and yelling at people, but just being that figure that you need, that masthead you need at the Daily Planet.
Sweet, very good, Shay.
Wow, I suddenly want to change it to the last minute. I think I'm going to go ahead and do so. You said not necessarily physically large, and the person I was thinking of just a moment ago is actually rather tall. And I was just like, wow, who's not tall that has that same sort of like our presence? Danny DeVito. He's getting nice and old these days. He could be a more of a grandfatherly kind of Danny DeVito, maybe more of the calmer.
I think you just broke Aaron's brain.
That's right. Why are we friends with Shay?
I don't know.
What's wrong with Danny DeVito?
Oh, my God.
Gives us something to laugh about and play off of on the show.
I like Danny DeVito a lot, but that would be a gross miscasting in my opinion.
What, are you eating a fish?
Yeah, he'd be eating a fish and saying, wah, 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 wah.
He can be serious. I've seen him do somewhat serious
things. I like Danny DeVito. He's just not right for that role at all.
But don't forget John.
Yeah, I know. Go ahead, John.
When I was thinking of this, two character actors came up. One was William H. Macy, the other Chris Cooper. But I was actually watching Carnival Season 2 yesterday, and I watched this guy called John Carroll Lynch, who played Stroud in that.
Yep.
Also known as the brother in Drew Carey, the cross-dresser in that. But he can carry himself. He's got the look of what Perry White looks like in the comic books. Kind of a robust, big guy.
John Carroll Lynch, right?
What's that?
John Carroll Lynch?
Yeah.
Wasn't he the barber in Gran Torino?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Sorry, I just making sure I knew who it was. Yeah, I like that guy.
But he can play a heavy. He can play that kind of, as you were saying, the father kind of figure. but he can really, he can also demand a room and command it. So that's who I settled with. That's but Willie McMacy is perfect for it, I thought.
That's a good casting. Something that when I cast movies, there's a lot of times that when we were doing this, we're doing like some sort of reboot or reimagining or a different story or something. And I always like to throw like some sort of, you know, throwback to the old movies. But with this one, you could say I did that by recasting Brandon Routh, which is all fine and dandy. But I want to give like a really good old throwback. I went with Terrence Stamp. Actually, I could really see him.
Yeah, I thought about him.
I could just see him, you know, being that, you know, cigar chewing, larger than life, fatherly figure, and because
I could see him throwing himself into the role.
I could too. That type of actor. But it's just like, you know, the way I feel about casting Terrence Stamp is the way I felt when I heard that Frank Langella was cast. It was just all like, huh, he's a bit intense for that. And then I saw that, you know, he's able to soften himself up, mm-hmm. and you know, as we know, Terrence Stamp is an incredible actor. So I'd like to see it. I mean, it would just be like a fun homage back to the old Christopher Reeve days. So yeah, that's who I cast. And you know, William H. Macy I wouldn't have a problem with. So cool. Moving on. I guess we're on to our villain.
Our villains, yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's crack this bitch open, Shay. Ethan.
Ethan.
Whoever you are.
Sheathan.
Okay. Interesting.
I decided to go, my first gut reaction was to go with someone like Brainiac.
Sure.
But I sort of went and looked at Superman's Rogue Gallery, and really, I have got to go with probably one of my personal favorite Superman villains, and that is Darkseid.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bold choice for
an
opening movie.
He'd be great for a second. He'd be great for a third.
Yes.
Sorry.
And he's awesome. I love Darkseid. He's such a great villain. But I think it opens it up to a lot of other villains. I mean, you could start with Kalibak and, you know, work in tons of other stuff there.
The idea of
putting in Granny Goodness and
get Ed Asner to play her.
Get Ed Asner to play her. Browner blank our name, choosing Misery.
Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates.
Well, I just said Ed Asner because he voiced her in the cartoon.
I'd watch Kathy Bates. She's fantastic.
She is.
But I went with Darkseid, and I also resisted the gut reaction of just casting Michael Ironside.
Yeah. Throw some fucking armor
on him.
Yeah.
Okay. Going with the theme of the movie and whatnot, I sort of went for an older actor. I went with a 51-year-old actor.
That's not older. And my parents are way older than that.
He's older than
me. Us. Yeah.
A 51-year-old actor that I know can play a great villain, that I know can throws himself into roles really well, and is just a consummate actor at what he does. That's Vincent D'Onofrio.
I'd like to see that.
I would love to see what he would do with that role.
He's another one of those. I have an eye on him because he is a very good actor. Mm-hmm. And
oh yeah,
he's like one of those people that a lot of people don't like working with because he's such the method actor, you know, that he drives people nuts. But yeah, I'm sure he could pull that off. I like him. I like Vincent D'Onofrio.
And for those who don't know who Vincent D'Onofrio is, he was Gorin on Law and Order Criminal Intent for several years.
He was the bug in Men in Black.
The bug in Men in Black, yes. He's one of those actors that has been in tons of stuff.
I mean, Private Pile and Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, Full Metal Jacket. He's been in everything.
I think Bad Guy in the Cell.
I think he'd make a great Bullock, actually.
Mm, yeah. That was a really good out-of-your-ass pull. Mm-hmm. I could really see that.
Will you ask me what he should play?
I think he's a little old for the role, but
sure,
love
the guy. Sure, cool.
I would love to see what he would do with Darkseid.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Shay, what'd you do?
I picked. I went with the Ultra Humanite. I had to kind of come up with an explanation in my mind of how I was going to work the Ultra Humanite in there, and I kind of went with a Lex Luthor secret project that he gets to claim no knowledge of. So Lex Luthor kind of walks on and walks off as like,
Luthor's in there as the Machiavellian.
It's like, sure. Yes, he was responsible, but there was a mutant monkey in the basement controlling a computer that actually did all the bad stuff, mm-hmm. so he can't get in trouble. And that was basically it. It's a mutant monkey, super intelligent monkey. I was thinking have a CG voiced by Liam Neeson.
I like Liam Neeson. Was it Powers Booth the voice for him, or am I thinking of Grodd?
You're thinking of Grodd.
Yeah, who was that Kelsey? No, it wasn't Kelsey Grammer.
No.
Who the fuck voiced Ultra Humanite?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
We can look it up.
I don't care that much. So cool. Moving on. Who would you like to see in the next one, John?
I went with who was rumored, which is General Zod for it. And Ian McShane. You might know him from Deadwood as L. Schwarzenegger. And right from that role, you know he can play a bad guy. And I think you need somebody who's older, who can command a room, has presence.
Yeah, and I don't know if I could see General Zod saying cocksucker every other word.
That'd be awesome.
Because really, whenever I see Ian McShane, I expect him to say cocksucker every other word. But he says it well. He's damn good.
I like Ian McShane.
Put a whole new spin on Kung Fu Panda, let me tell you.
Yeah. Continue.
But, he's who I could see playing a hard-nosed general who can pound down Superman.
Sure. See, when I was doing this, I too went with General Zod because he is A, rumored, and B, I also stole this casting because I do remember that in the time of Superman Returns, they were discussing General Zod appearing in it, maybe just in like the beginning and then doing a bigger deal with him in the sequel, and they offered the role to Jude Law. And he turned them down twice. And I could just really see that. First off, he really looks an awful lot like a young Terrence Stamp, if you really think about it. He is a fantastic actor. He does not quite yet have... I can't really say that he doesn't have a comic book movie, because he did do The Road to Perdition. But
not exactly.
I could see him pulling it off. I mean, he's a very good actor. I've seen him get himself bulked up for a role, and I think he looks the part. So that's who I went with because, you know, also the movie people were thinking about it. So I'm at least somewhat along the same lines because I agree with it. So that was my role. I mean, my villain. Because I like Zod. Probably mostly because of Terrence Stamp. But yeah, so anybody have anything to add? I think that wraps us up.
No, apparently Ultra Humanite was voiced by Ian Buchanan.
Ah, yeah, he was on Days of Our Lives. He was, yeah, I've seen him before, Ian Buchanan. You remember that Christmas episode they did when,
yes,
when he had to go get that farting duck thing and with Flash? And that was a good episode. I liked that one. But yeah, I guess that's going to wrap us up for our casting couch. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with a characterization of the movie Inception. And we are back with our characterization segment. This time around, we looked at the calendar and we decided to try to be a little bit topical on the subject. And we decided what we wanted to do was we wanted to discuss Inception. And it's topical because it is actually coming out on DVD this Tuesday, DVD and Blu-ray. Go to your local stores and buy it because it is awesome, as we have discussed on this show.
Definitely a movie to get on Blu-ray, I would say.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Beautiful movie. But what we decided to do is we're going to fuck it up by putting it in a role-playing game and making anything cool about it not cool anymore. But what is the first step that we need to take in turning this wonderful, well-thought-out world into a role-playing game? What's the first step, guys?
I think the first step is recognizing that it's modern era of some kind or another. I mean, the system is the choice.
Well, first of all, what are we trying to put into the role-playing game? The actual concept of Inception or Inception itself?
Yeah, are we trying to do the
doing the going the world? Into dreams and the whole weakness part of the dream, because you could do that in anything.
Mm-hmm. You just pretty much say, there's a box that does it, and there you go.
Or it's magic, done.
It's you walk into another room. It's
yeah. All right, good night, everybody.
That's the problem.
That was easy.
So
or are we saying taking the movie Inception and making it into a role-playing game?
I think taking the movie and turning it into a role-playing game would actually be the challenge.
I mean, that'd be okay. Almost like something that somebody actually might pay for a group to do. Be like, hey, we made this movie. Would you make a game setting so that people can look at the character sheets and that kind of thing? I think the biggest challenge there is, like, what makes it different than just to say it's basically Spycraft with an extra little piece of equipment that takes you into the dream realm. And that basically comes into sort of a series of skills that would have to be associated with keeping your head together because of the whole problem with the mental problems, you know, the guy had with the whole wife and the deal and all that. I mean, those mental problems that he had came out into the dream Inception world. And so there'd have to be some sort of mechanic that controlled his sanity, and they talked about, you know, don't, you know, there was the skill roles of certain people are builders. Was that a feat? Is that a class?
Mm-hmm.
Some people are architects. So, you know, there's different talents. There's
I mean, is it, if you're talking of designing a new game from the ground up or shoehorning it into a different type of a game, or a different,
that is the
system.
First question, yeah.
I'd say if you're building a game from the ground up, you know, I mean, your sky's the limit on that. But I'd say if you're going to shoehorn it into a game, really Inception, I think, plays best into probably like Mage the Ascension.
I can definitely see that with the mechanics.
I think that's the easiest one to push it into.
See, that's
how that, yeah.
You like to just plug concepts into existing systems.
It's simpler. I mean,
I'm sure it is simpler.
Quite frankly, the work's been done already.
Yeah. Exactly.
The heavy lifting is done. All
NWO,
I have to do is tweak
Syndicate,
it.
Syndicate, a couple of hit marks, we're done. Anyway.
Exactly. See, Savage World's done. Hey, you know. That should be my answer to every characterization round. Savage World's.
Action points.
Done. See, you know, me, I don't have enough of a working knowledge of role-playing games as of late to really do that. And so I just kind of look at some of the more difficult concepts that I don't really necessarily think of a game mechanic for it. And, like, the thing that jumps at me more than anything is the builders, because you're actually, you know, physically affecting the world. And I almost see that as, like a fun way to do that was you would actually have to work out a character sheet for your GM. And you would actually have to have, you know, like, savings throws versus your GM, you know, because, like, the world is trying to implode on it. And
well, there's certain mechanics you can use from various game systems that let you do stuff like that. I mean, Savage Worlds has the Benny system where you spend a Benny and you can re-roll a die. But there are there's certain games that use points, drama points, action points, whatever you want to call them, where if you spend enough of them, it allows you to actually affect the reality of the game and say, well, this is going to happen at this point.
I'd also want to take those mechanics and make them more into a skill-based or a willpower-based role, mm-hmm. in that sense of your... It's just a matter of how conscious you
are.
This is
why I think it would just really work best in the White Wolf Mage Ascension. Now, I haven't
pulled back some
of
the
sphere stuff, so I don't really care. But
they take the spheres out of it and make it just sort of a willpower, sort of a White Wolf Mortals game with, you know, as though you were putting a sleeper into some sort of hit mark equipment. Which does strike me. If you had to pick anything, I would definitely say, if this is just a washed over game, it would be a
just like with how the movie handled it. Is I think ultimately it goes into just the flavor. It's all flavor is how they handled it in the movie. They didn't explain how the Inception itself worked. It just did. So, and the thing is, you don't need to
take a little pill. Boom.
Pretty much, yeah. And I don't think it needs to be explained. I think if you're going to make it into a game, there's going to be people out there who are going to like, well, how does this work? I want to know how I can mess with it and do all this crazy, wonky stuff. And I want to be a hacker who hacks this stuff in. And
so correct
you're going to have people who are in there doing that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you just said in characterizing Inception, don't?
No, definitely
no,
not.
No, I would say...
I say don't. Fuck it. Watch the movie.
If you characterize Inception, you need to put... a lot of restrictions on people saying, okay, you guys are this team, and, you know,
then
one person who
certain
does this
personality
role, this person
should not be allowed to play.
granted, yeah, I mean, it's with any game, you want to pick and choose your players.
Sure.
And it's something I would say if you sat down to do a game about Inception, is like, well, you guys are this team. There isn't any.
There's no discussion.
There is no discussion as far as you're not. There are no people who hack this stuff. You don't do this. This, you know, this is unimportant. These are the types of characters you need to look at and make.
In terms of that, you're taking away some free will, right?
Well, oh, yeah, totally.
No, I think
so. Agreeing with don't so far, John.
But you're the only one saying it. So,
what do you say, John?
I agree with you guys.
Oh, wow. We've got a yes man on the line, I think.
Yeah, I say don't. Fuck it. I mean, it just keeps everything I think about it. It just kind of, you know, would strip some of the fun of playing it.
No, I think that what I would do if it was just like, okay, it's up to you, Shay. Now, what would you do? I'd take Spycraft.
God help us all.
Pull out the base classes and put in architect classes. Maybe keep some of the core like soldier classes. And then have an architect class, have a designer class, have a couple of gradients between the characters. Add a little depth to the analysis to say that there's certain people who are better at something and certain people who are better at maybe manipulating it during the fashion.
And I'm sort of the mind of saying with Inception is that I think a game based on Inception would be inherently boring.
Well, I think what it is...
It makes a great movie, but I wouldn't want to play the game because you do sort of do the same thing over and over again.
Well,
and other games already have the cool aspects of it in Inception. There are other games that pull that off and cover that cover those bases just fine.
It could be a cool card game.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably a better way to go. A card game.
Because you would have your different levels.
Or a tiles game, some sort of abstract type of game like that. But you know, I think there's better things you could do with your time.
I mean, I think of stuff like adding skill check penalties for being in the third level of dreaming and strange things along that line of saying there are certain physical effects that apply when you're at second stage versus third stage. And, I mean, to a certain extent, a good storytelling game, which we were speaking of the storyteller system, is about a discussion and a narrative that occurs between characters. And that's what that story of the Inception game would be about. It would be about basically brainwashing or brain hacking an individual. And the story, the GM would be tasked, sort of the flavor and the narrative of the game would be, this is a story about you getting under someone's skin. You're sitting in a place where they feel comfortable, so you get to play with their head a lot more, and it's basically you get posed, okay, you need to get this information out of this guy. Start asking me questions, start rolling dice, and I start giving you pieces of this character profile that I have, and then it's all about rolling dice in various ways to get more and more information out of this person, and then sort of figuring out the either a clever way or the way that was pre-prepared by the scenario to produce the result that was described, like getting the kid to do what they did revolved around getting him to feel a certain way about his father. And so you could repeat that kind of scenario where maybe it says something to a Santa Claus, or maybe it's the girl he went out on a date with in high school or something like this, and these kind of scenarios could be made where you're basically psychologically breaking into somebody's mind and swapping pieces of what's important to them with other things.
Sounds like high concept artsy fartsy bullshit that I won't have anything to fucking do with.
I work on
Batman with the sword. That's what I want to have something to do with. Yeah.
Batman with the sword.
It's Batman. Man, that just sounds so boring. I just would not want to play that game at all. Yeah. Not even a little bit.
Alrighty then.
John, is that what we said or what?
Yeah, you guys did a good job.
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks, John. It's like I have no idea what these people are talking about.
Me neither, and I hear it every other week. So, hey, cool. But I guess that's going to wrap us up on our characterization of Inception. So, I guess stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our Confessions of a Movie Snob on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. And we are back with Confessions of a Movie Snob on the 2010 David Yates release of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. What in being let in with the title, this is actually just one part of a two-part series. There are 7 of the Harry Potter films, the books.
How many has David Yates directed now? Has he done this since... Order of the Phoenix?
Yes, he's done. He did Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince, and then these two.
That was just a curiosity in myself.
Yeah, that makes him the most prolific of the Harry Potter directors. Chris Columbus directed the first two.
And then it was Alphonse Cuarón, and then it was Mike Newell.
Mike Newell, who directed the fourth one. So yeah, then after the fifth, we got. We have David Yates, and I think he does a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing this movie, the absolute most important parts of the movie were in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. I'm actually just fucking with everybody. Shay missed the first 20 minutes.
The first 20 minutes of the movie, you had the musical number, you had the...
The porn was amazing.
Yeah, I wouldn't miss the porn.
I'm surprised that they got that actually past the censors. Yeah, with the donkey.
Mm, that beautiful Cummicus spell, I loved that. It was amazing. It was amazing.
And in 3D.
Yeah.
So they based it off of the fanfics? Okay.
Yeah. Now, and actually, all seriousness, before we actually get into this review... we don't ever really pull any punches when it comes to spoilers, because, you know, I don't think...
So stop now.
I don't have a filter between my brain and my mouth, so I'm not going to say, hey, people,
We'll just go through the motions here. Rosebud was a sled.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Was there anything else?
What else happened? Darth Vader was somebody's dad.
Darth Vader's
dad.
Luke's father,
Bruce Willis is dead.
Kevin Spacey's Kaiser Sose.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's better.
We're going to do our best to not spoil the second part. The first part, it's been 3 weeks, you've had a chance to see it. As far as I'm concerned. Okay, getting into this movie, I think it's... Personally, I don't think it's beneficial to try to review it without bringing up the book, if you've read it. Now, John is in a unique situation of having not read the book. Is that correct? Yeah, so John and Shay have not read it. Ethan and I have. You have read it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have read it.
I've listened to it.
Listen to the audiobook.
Audiobooks are excellent.
So. Yeah, Jim Dale's awesome. Okay, so I need to be very careful in reviewing this movie in that I liked it. I mean, I'm trying to get that out off the bat. I did like it. It was good. Yeah. I do have complaints about it.
I liked it better than the last movie. I thought the last movie was entirely exposition. And
I feel the same way about this one, honestly.
Some really bad story decisions, in my opinion, but... I still enjoyed the movie. This one was leaps and bounds better.
I think that, you know, to me, I thought that they both suffered from the same thing, and the fact that they're they're leading to that last second part.
There's so much that they have. It's sort of like I see you got Da Vinci Code over there. It sort of has that same problem of there's so much information they have to tell you in order for you to understand what's going on that it sort of inundates you.
That's why it's at times two-parter.
But I think about this one that just. It dragged certain points, but the thing is, so did the book.
Yeah.
So at all the points the movie dragged, so did the book.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Amazing.
First thing that comes to my mind in looking at the movie and in the book is I think they made a very poor decision in just like the opening 5 minutes of the movie in cutting out the goodbye between the Dursleys and Harry.
Yeah.
I thought that was almost unforgivable. I mean, that was one of the best scenes in the book, and it was completely skipped over. Mm-hmm. He walked
over to the closet and looked in it, and sort of longingly, which I thought was a little bit odd, but I felt it.
There was a whole scene and dialogue and everything in the book, and it actually painted Dudley in a little bit nicer picture. I got to say that. Another thing I got to say about this movie, I'm going to try to do the compliment sandwich approach. What's a good thing to say? Casting. Very good cast of movie. I mean,
could really be said about all of them.
It can be said about all of them, except for maybe the first one.
Yeah.
Because the kids were awful fucking actors in the first one. Oh, but, you know, they've had a decade to work on the characters and really get under the skins of the characters.
And we got Bill Nighy in this one.
Yeah, we do have Bill Nighy.
Although he was in it for,
you know, 4 seconds. But he was cool. I liked him. He was Rufus Scrimgeour, the new prime minister.
Mm-hmm. Oh, with the thing.
Huh?
But when he was like standing there giving his speech, and his hand was all like fluttering all over the place. I don't recall that,
but you know it might have happened. John, thoughts so far?
I agree with you guys.
did you even see the movie?
Yeah, he's seen it twice.
it is a lot of exposition. It's a lot of just kind of slow beats to it, which for, I think, Harry Potter fans and of the books and of the movies, they want that interaction between those characters. They want, you know, the fight between Ron and Harry. They want what's-her-face, the girl, to stay with Harry. You know, they want those little snippets of, you know, humanity in them. You know, cutting the hair, you know, sitting on the steps looking at the book together. And it does slow the movie down, but if you grew up reading the books or watching the movies, you kind of want to see that between those characters.
Yeah, and you mentioned action beats. I mean, there were times when I was watching this movie, and I actually found myself looking, okay, they should probably put in some action soon, because
yeah,
this
I'm
is
falling
getting
asleep.
Kind of
yeah.
boring. And very shortly thereafter, something would happen, you know.
Yeah.
So
it made me think of a sort of a World War II movie, only in, along the lines of A Diary of Anne Frank, where they gave her, like, a machine gun at the beginning and the end. You know, like, it's like, what if Anne Frank got to shoot off a couple of rounds before she had to hide for a week or something, you know, for a year? Because that's what it was. Is they kind of got into a little bit of a fight, and then they hid in the woods.
Pretty much.
That was basically
the thing. Is, though, if you read the book, that's exactly what happens in the book.
Right.
So,
yeah. You know, and they did a good job of capturing two people who were basically like, we're on our own here for the most part. We've got to kind of use our spells
and
to figure out what's going on.
My main complaints for the movie all stem from my complaints for the book. They start off saying, okay, we need to go find these Horcruxes. Okay, we found one of them. All right, great. Well, now to destroy it, we have to go find the Sword of Gryffindor. Great.
Yeah. That just came out of nowhere.
Now we went
movie.
And found that.
Yeah.
It was very Deus Ex Machina in the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then after they find that, they destroy the Horcrux. Like, okay, now we need to go find the Deathly Hallows. It's like, okay, how many things do they have to suddenly throw in there going, you have to go find all this crap in the last book. Go.
Reading the book and reading the book and watching the movies, the Deathly Hallows did feel very forced.
Yes.
They felt unnecessary.
I mean,
and
it was, to me, especially in the books, and I think they could have done it a little better in the movies, is that they could have planted some hints in there earlier and sort of woven them throughout the story a bit better, and that way being like, oh, okay, like seeing that symbol for all, like, for the last four movies would have been great.
Yeah, instead of just in that one.
Yeah, exactly. And I would have been a fan of seeing that sort of a more of an intricate storyline sort of woven in the last couple movies. But
like John was saying, it seems like it was more about Hermione, Harry, Ron, the relationships between them, and the relationship between Hermione and Ron, and why it's more abiding than the relationship between Harry and Hermione, and, you know, why he's kissing Ginny goodbye at the beginning of the movie.
You just seriously said Ginny, didn't you?
Her name is Ginny.
Ginny. It's Ginny.
I read it as Ginny.
And the whole Ginny-Harry romance thing
plays out a lot better in the books.
Yes, a lot better in the books. And I just think the Half-Blood Prince was not converted well into a movie at all.
It was my favorite book, and
it's a good book. I mean, there's a lot that goes on in it, and I think this movie suffers because the last movie didn't translate very well. So, like, you really sort of didn't get the whole chemistry between Ginny and Harry type of thing. It's like, okay,
but he saw her
naked
back.
Yeah, ooh.
Yeah, giggity.
Giggity. yeah, so, I mean, there's a bit more... It just seems like there's some missing story elements in the movies.
Sure.
In this one. And I think this movie picks it up a bit better, picks up the pace better, picks up the characters better, but it still suffers from the last movie.
Yeah. And the last movie is going to be super fantastic, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Now, they've got a lot of stuff to find, put together, and break in,
not really,
like an hour.
They got like two.
Oh, well, this movie was 2.5 hours long. So
yeah. They've got like, what, four of the...
Yeah, it seems like they got three.
And I don't think they established in this one that the snake is one of them.
The snake is one of them. They established
But they didn't establish it in the movie.
Oh, and they also didn't establish in the movies that the final one is in Voldemort.
Yeah.
And that was in the books early.
Okay, yeah, so that's, yeah, so we're down to two right
there. There's pretty much two.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I remember how many Horcruxes total were there?
Seven.
There were seven. There were seven total. Oh, the final one had to be in his, it had to actually be in Voldemort.
In Voldemort.
Then there was
the
diary.
There's the diary, the ring, the locket. What were the other two?
The other two? Do you really want me to say?
Yes.
Okay. There was the tiara of Helga Hufflepuff.
Right.
And the other one was Harry.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's going to be hard to break.
That's why I asked you if you wanted me to, spoil it.
Spoilers.
Okay, I need to get...
Sorry.
I need to get this in here. I have not seen anybody discuss this movie, talk about this movie, without bringing up the scene when they're explaining the Hallows. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on that scene?
That was really
the
cool.
The animated sequence? I really liked it.
I thought it was done incredibly. Yeah. I thought it was really cool, really pretty. It felt grossly out of place to me.
No.
It fell out of place to me because we have six movies prior to it.
We've never done a storytelling sequence like that.
Where there's even flashbacks and explaining stuff that isn't written in stone, and yet they are live-action flashbacks. And this one, we got a weird-ass cartoon, which was fucking cool, but to me, it felt out of place.
Go ahead, John.
In the other movies, those are flashbacks to, people and things that happened. Harry's path and things like that, where this was a story. They were telling a children's story to Harry, basically.
But it's a children's story that's based off of reality.
But they may not have it right. They may be skipping a lot.
To him out of the book, so maybe it's him picturing it as the pictures in a book kind of come to life.
See, I can't quite put a finger on it, but to me, it just really felt out of place, and it really, ripped me out of the movie. I mean, as much as I liked it, it just something about it struck me.
It sort of struck me more as a element of things that happen in movies now is, 10 years ago when they started these movies, they didn't do stuff like this.
Right.
Whereas now, it seems a bit more natural to do that.
I don't know.
Really, the first movie that did it that I really, really remember was Kill Bill. But,
Here's another theory.
When they just go completely stylistically another direction for one scene.
And this is a crazy off-the-wall theory. I haven't read the books, and this is something that if it was in the books, it might have mentioned something like this. It's like, I thought it maybe, I don't know, they're wizards and they've got apparating fireplaces. Maybe when you tell certain types of fairy tales in Wizarding World, the picture shows up. And they're like, well, we don't want to tell you this. Well, okay, we'll tell you the fairy's going to show up and then blah, blah, blah.
It could have been something interesting if they got out a storybook and flipped around. They could have done a bit better of a stylization.
If they were actually, looking at the book and then, the pictures were moving, I could buy that.
Yeah, I agree. That would have been really neat.
But that kind of just flashback, from whomever's mind's eye, to me, I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong, but to me, it just really caught my attention in a way that I didn't really like. But
that was really nice.
Okay, now I need to think of something else positive to say about it, because I have one more negative thing to say about it.
I think they all looked very much like they were really feeling the sorrow of...
Very well-acted movie.
The how serious the
movie. And we didn't see Hogwarts in the movie.
Nope.
There was a moment where...
You saw it from the outside.
Yeah, but no, very never, briefly.
Oh, sure,
which is an interesting,
You felt change. That in the book, too.
Yeah,
Like an absence of Hogwarts.
Yes. I liked how Michael Gambon still came back and did his things. That was great. That they still felt to bring him back and actually put him in the pictures and do his thing. I like the art design on the movie has really gotten a lot better from the first movie on to this one. I know that was stretching, wasn't it?
I have a positive thing to say that's going to lead into negative, and I have a final negative thing to say. Positive thing, the visual effects were incredible in Dobby and Creature.
Dobby looked much better from so Chamber much Secrets. Real.
And once
so
again, real. That ripped me out of it because he looked so much better than what I was used to.
Sure.
He looked real. It looked like they had a real little green guy. That's my negative on that. My final negative is
too good. Sorry, moving on.
Yeah, that's a great negative to have. Fucking fantastic special effects. I think the movie was edited very poorly. it ended way too abruptly for my taste.
See, and I didn't get that.
I disagree.
I didn't get that. I think it ended where it
should have, right. But they did not do a good job transitioning to the credits. It was literally him, I have the power, and then black.
Right.
And they could have done a fade. They could have done another little thing with, you know, Harry digging the grave. They could have done anything, but just going from, like, that moment of power to black and nothing.
Right. Well, I didn't get that. It was very much a come back for part two next July kind of thing, you know, and I didn't get that from it, so.
And another negative thing I have to say about it is, in my opinion, it was a gross mistake of them not to stick a fucking sequel to the, or to a credit, or trailer to the sequel after the end of the movie.
Sure.
Is a good question.
Especially since it's filmed.
Right. I mean, and we just watched
70% completed.
Wanted more, et cetera.
John?
No. The one thing I have to say about that is it's kind of about, you said about how they ended it. It's kind of how they did a lot of the sequences, just kind of fade to black. And then move to a next thing, like almost like end of chapter.
It was like in a book, but and to me, it's not a book. It's a movie. I mean, if you want this in book form, they're out there. This should be the theatrical interpretation of said books. And you know, I'm really hate the way that I review movies most of the time because I come across so negative. I really liked it. But, you know, those things jumped out at me, and I enjoyed it. I actually paid for it, and I don't have to pay to go to movies, and I had no problem paying for it.
I'm looking forward to seeing this in, you know, when the second part comes out.
Me too.
Are they going to re-release this one?
Oh, at all? Probably.
They should if they're not. Mm-hmm. But the release of seeing part one and part two together would be nice. It could be long. It would be long, but, you know. Watch one chapter of extended Lord of the Rings would be done.
Really?
No, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. But the I think seeing it in combination with the other one, as far as, you know, seeing part one, part two, and then looking at together as a whole, I'm looking forward to the next part. This one makes me want to see the next part.
Me too.
Even if I wasn't going to see it already, you know what I mean? All I got to say is I hope they blow me away with the Battle of Hogwarts at the end. That was an awesome in the book. I hope they don't disappoint.
Is there a lot of combat in the last?
Oh shit! Okay. Yes. Oh yeah. It's like what, four chapters of hard ass combat at the end.
I can see why they would put all the long walking in one movie and then bam 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 bam. Mm-hmm.
I forget, was the dragon in this one?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I don't know if you saw the trailer for both parts, but they kind of show stuff that is going to be from the second part, and there's stuff that's leading to where the final battle is not going to go down like they showed it in the book, because, like,
okay.
I understand that it was in the book,
boom, it was that quick.
Yeah,
and it looks like there's going to be more of a struggle in like the book. Yeah, and which is fine.
Well, I mean, that's cinema. They do that.
Show, don't tell.
It exciting.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, it's kind of. I mean. It's kind of cool. This big old pain in the ass gets taken out like that, you know. But at the same time, it is better cinematically that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nothing else to say. I liked it a lot, and I'm trying to get on record. I did like it. I am complaining about stuff, but I liked it a lot. I love Harry Potter, and I feel that I feel passionate
enough to complain about it.
I feel passionate enough to complain about it. And you know, like, you know,
for all of its misgivings, it didn't ruin the movie for me.
Oh, far from it. I it was exciting. I'd like to see it a second time. Mm-hmm. I'd
sort
very
like
much
a
like
nitpick
to
see. Of something you actually liked. Yeah, a little bit better here, a little bit better there.
I love it so much. I can tell it how it can improve for me to love it more.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. But yeah, I liked it. Ethan liked it. Shay, you liked it?
I did indeed like it.
John, you liked it?
I loved it.
Okay, there you go. So, I guess that wraps us up for the Confessions of a Movie Snob. We're going to be right back with our nominations for the Indomitable Order of Zone of Ruthoz, Part 5.
As I float in.
Welcome back, boys and girls. This is issue number 34, where this is where we're going to be naming off all of our nominees for the Zone of Ruthos, for the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthos.
All right.
Rocket, Ethan.
Breaking the mold. As Aaron said, he was breaking the mold. I am breaking the mold, too, as we generally go with old white people. I'm going with not old white people, but an old Chinese person. I'm going with Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan's pretty cool.
Jackie Chan is the man.
I do like me some Jackie Chan.
So, yeah. Jackie Chan. What more can I say? I mean, the guy's been the biggest
Chan.
Box office draw in Asia.
Man, that's a lot of fucking people.
He is the Chopsocky King. He was the new Mr. Miyagi. And who wasn't really Mr. Miyagi, obviously, but
Mr. Han. Did you see that movie?
Yes, I did finally see it.
Wasn't that nice?
It was
nice
good.
Little movie.
It was a fun film.
I haven't seen it.
Yes, he's done some dogs, but he's also done some damn funny movies. Even back in the 70s, you know, he had A Half a Loaf of Kung Fu, Drunken Master, and then on up to Armor of God and Rumble in the Bronx, and then even his American stuff. I still enjoy a good run of Rush Hour and Shanghai Noon.
Really funny.
He's just a fun guy to watch. He seems very sincere about loving his fans.
Yep.
And
seems like a nice guy.
He's one of those guys that will actually get me out to. It's really sort of in line with what the Zone of Ruthos is all about. He'll get me out to a movie just based on him being in it. So
Jackie Chan's in it.
Yeah, cool. I like Jackie Chan. I guess we're going to get into my nominee now. And once again, we're talking about those people that gets us out to the movie theater. And one person that I rarely miss a movie in the theater is none other than actually one of tonight's people chosen for the casting couch. I chose Liam Neeson.
Hey.
I love Liam Neeson. He's gotten to that point where he's just playing the badass roles. What about him?
It's my second choice.
Is he? I love Liam Neeson.
Meryl Streep is my second.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Awesome. I love Meryl Streep. My second choice is Alan Rickman.
Nice. And Liam Neeson, I mean, case in point, Taken.
I love Taken.
I saw the trailer for that and was like, I want to see Liam Neeson kicking some ass.
Yep.
I'm there.
Yeah.
He's gone through this thing of playing like the badass mentors, you know, lately. Like he did it in Gangs of New York.
Sort of started with Star Wars.
Yeah, and Star Wars.
Shifted
and
from
fucking Gangs of New York, Kingdom of Heaven, Batman Begins, and then there's that fun Merlin thing thrown in there with him being the bad guy too.
Yeah.
I love
me some Liam Neeson.
They chose him as pretty much being the voice of God in the fucking Narnia movies.
Yeah,
with Aslan. And I didn't like those movies or the books, but
I like the book.
I love
too,
Liam Neeson. So. I mean, I watched a fucking what's that dude? Anton Egoyan film because of Liam Neeson. I saw Chloe. It was okay until it turned into shit. But hey, Liam Neeson was good in it.
In Krull.
You first saw him in Krull? I don't know what the first thing I remember seeing him in.
Liam Neeson?
I
don't remember a thing. The problem is he's been in everything.
Yeah, I remember him from Excalibur.
He's in a Dirty Harry movie.
Hey, he's in Next of Kin, motherfucker, with Patrick Swayze. He was in lots of stuff. He was in Nell.
Darkman.
He was fucking Darkman. I love Liam Neeson. So, did you have a second choice, John, or did you miss that memo?
I missed that memo.
No. Okay. Well, cool. So, it looks like this time around we're gonna have Kurt Russell, Meryl Streep, Jackie Chan, and Liam Neeson. So that should be fun. We'll get that posted on the site ASAP.
Yep.
So, go and vote for your favorite of the choices. I don't really care who wins this one, because I love all these people.
Yeah,
really. We get four votes, a four-way tie. That'd be badass. But, you have anything else to add to the Zone of Ruthos?
To the Zone of Ruthos? Well, I think, just to reiterate what Zone of Ruthos is all about, you know, it's those guys that get us out to the movie theaters, get us into Stan the fucking Manley. It's into comics, you know. It's someone so cool that you've got to add fucking to their middle name.
Yeah, could not agree more. Could not agree.
And I think all of these people are good examples of it.
So. I think so, too. Like, there's some of them that I would prefer other people not to win. This one, don't care. That's awesome.
Yeah, and that really, the last one was like that, too. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's making good strides.
It is making good strides. So I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, we're going to have the poll on the site. ASAP. We're going to be voting on it for 5 weeks.
Put it this way: if you're listening to this episode or watching this episode, you can go to the website right now.
Awesome.
And vote.
And vote. We will be naming the newest nominee on issue number 40,
mm-hmm.
which is when we always name off our newest members, our newest winners on the 10 issues of every show. Do you think any of you guys will be able to be back on at that point, John?
If not just me, the rest of the guys, I know they've weather conditions and wives kept us whole group from doing it tonight.
Blizzards, but, yeah.
Wives really are a force of nature, aren't they?
They are.
They are. Well, I don't really
be here, not the other guys as well.
Yeah,
awesome.
I know.
Yep, glad to have you.
It's been a lot of fun. So next week, tune in. We're going to be doing.
We'll be doing that on January 19th.
Yeah, January 19th is when number. Our sixth member of the Zone of Ruthlaws will be inducted. I'm looking forward to it. But next week, before we do any of that, go ahead and tune in and check us out next week. What are we doing next week, Ethan? I don't remember.
Yeah,
let's see. We are opening up everything with a We Make It of Ghostbusters 3.
That's right.
Yet another movie that's come through the pipelines, and there's actually been
It's been stalled, though. I mean,
It keeps getting stalled, but it's actually got momentum going now.
Yeah, but it hasn't been greenlit, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And so who knows if we'll see it happen.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But if it did, we'd like to say what we'd like to see happen with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we're going to be doing a fun little segment. We're going to be doing our top six of our top six most favorite musical moments in film, which is going to be really ambiguous because what really makes a musical moment in film? Is it, you know,
like outright musical, or is it use of music in a movie?
Yeah, so it should be
interesting. Are we going to go actual musical type music?
I'm going to go all over the place.
Can I go to there's a particular Japanese anime episode.
No.
Really phenomenal use of music.
We already vetoed.
I know what we're doing. I was just fucking seeing if anybody else besides me remembers. We're going to be wrapping all that shit up with a Watch This of Supernatural, one of Ethan's favorite shows.
Oh. That's right. I haven't watched season 5 yet. So.
Not Paranormal Activity.
That's a movie. That's not a show.
Not a TV show.
So, yeah.
Right.
And they are making a Paranormal Activity 3.
Yeah, I know. It's coming out next October.
I can wait.
It's their new Saw franchise.
Cool. I never did see Saw 3D.
It's like horror softcore.
I like the first one. That one bad.
Cool.
Supernatural's awesome, though.
Think so,
I just totally spoiled the next episode.
Shit. Well, that's what
Watch This is all about. And me going, hey, it's awesome. You all suck.
Okay, well, does anybody have anything else to add before we go?
Kangaroos have nipples in their pouches.
Do they?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's hot.
They do.
I wish I had nipples in my pouch. Shay, do you have anything else weird to add?
Obey the Hypnotoad.
How about John?
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, he went for the mundane thing. I see.
I gotcha.
Making us all look strange and weird.
How about this? I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
That's John.
That's John. Let your geek flag fly.
Not like changing rhyme or making good time, and it's not like bathing in holy wine. Oh, and you do your best, and you do just fine, and you change.
I think I'm going to have to agree with Shane on this.